is Road to the Draft with Cal Toomey and Matt Edwards.
All right, hello and welcome to Road to the Draft, episode 26. Believe it or not, we're in draft week, only four sleeps away from the big night. It's very exciting. I'm Cal Toomey, and unfortunately there's no Nat Edwards this afternoon. She's unavailable. However, we do have a pretty good replacement, a draft aficionado, AFL CEO, Gillon McLachlan. Thanks for coming in the room and the podcast, Gil.
Thanks, Cal. Thanks for coming. I'm not sure that I'm going to be able to help a hell of a lot, but I'm very pleased to be here.
Well, I know you like the draft, though. That's why we're keen to get you on. You're very interested. Every time I walk past you in the corridor, you ask about who's going where and what you've heard. You do follow it, don't you? You're interested.
I'm interested because it's, you know, I'm interested in the same way everyone is, because it's the, you know, it's all about hope and it's all about, you know, the future for all of the clubs. Yeah, and I'm obviously keen to see where you think that, you know, talent is and how that's going. And then, you know, we need that top end to work for clubs, and they need, you know, to get it right, and it's really important. So, yeah, I'm interested in the same way punters are, I think.
You've got a bigger role to play on draft night than anyone else, though.
Yeah.
And we'll get to that in a second. Yeah. I want to ask you a little bit about the evolution of the draft in the recent years. The bidding system came in a couple of years ago and has changed things for the better, I think. I think most clubs would agree that it's been a good thing and a fairer thing. Can you talk to us about how that did come about and what effect it's had?
Well, the bidding system, I mean, I think you should have an uncompromised draft if you could. And the only time you should vary it is for strategic reasons and or valid reasons. And, you know, we've got the father, son, and we've got the academies. And if you take the academies, strategically we are growing talent there. And in the war for talent in half the population, it's been an incredibly important tool. So it was just a bit blunt, the instrument. First or second round wasn't doing it justice. You could have, even for the father, son, I remember Joe Danaher was about pick 11 or 12,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was, everyone knew he was the best player in that draft. He would have gone one in the draft. So pushed the guys to come up with something more nuanced, I guess. And I don't know where it came from. I think it was a combination of ideas and people riding in and different stuff. And the bidding system now, I think, does a great job about keeping the integrity of the draft while accommodating exemptions like the academy and father-son that we need either strategically with the academies or emotionally our game wants around father-sons.
Father-son always have a place, do you think?
Yeah, I think it's one of those ones that'd be difficult to see getting rid of. Everyone likes it. And I think people are prepared for a bit of compromise to see, you know, Jack Silvani play at Carlton is the most one of the more recent examples.
Do you think 100 games is set in stone, though? I mean, there's been talk about one game, 50 games, whether you're a premiership player, these sorts of things. Is 100 games always going to be the mark?
There's no right or wrong answer. I feel comfortable with it. I think at 100 games, then the father's been a legitimate player for that club. I'm not sure that you think that the emotive reason for having it, I don't think, is there at 5 games or 10 games, personally.
Yep. Other changes have included the trading of future picks, which has been a success. So that's sort of revolutionised, a re-energised trade period in some ways, hasn't it? It's made things so much more active because so many more deals can get done.
Yeah, so it puts leverage in the system.
Yeah.
Now, so I'd put more in it, I think, and you're probably going to talk about some of those ideas. The balance on the other side is, in the wrong hands, the more leverage in the system, the club can get further off course. So with smart operators and good and a well-run club, that can actually help you rebuild quicker and puts liquidity into the system. In the wrong hands, it means you can make some big calls and suddenly it's years before you get a chance to right the ship. So that's the challenge.
Do you have to think about that? Do you have to worry about that, like, you know, in the wrong
hands?
Well,
I do, yeah. So the guys, when they came and pitched the trading of future picks, I must say, a little reticent because I think about I can see the upside, but I also think about the downside. And so there is the proviso that you can only do two first rounders
over a cycle
was something that was introduced to help sell me in that actually you mitigate the how much damage in the wrong hands you could do.
Other changes seem on the horizon from all reports and talking to people. There's a lot of clubs out there that believe that the introduction of trading on the night will come in. Do you think it'll be in place next year?
I don't know if it'll be in place for next year, but I like it. If you go back, Cal, I reckon the challenge now, if I could change one thing, is I got asked the other day, if you were CEO of the AFL, what would you change? But it's like I have obviously stuff you can do in a transactional sense I think we've changed or are changing. But a broader ambition that I'd like to get done is if you're really well managed, you can go from the you can rebuild in 3 to 4 years, not 5 or 6.
Yeah.
So tools that mean if you're really smart and well managed, you can make a lot of change and have more leverage, then that's good. The issue is obviously what we just talked about. Then in the wrong hands, it's a problem.
Yeah.
So we're exploring all of that, and you know, trading players on the night, I think, is one where you can help clubs get better and get what they want. And I don't think there's too much leverage in it because you have to agree to it, and you're not trading the future so much. It's just the right player. So I think it's a good thing. So it means that a player, you know, pick five, you might need a key defender, but the best player's a midfielder, and then you've got a bit of leverage you can trade. So I think it's something that'll be that's a strong likelihood of coming in.
Even players, even just drafted players. So on the night, let's say that's
the next step, isn't it?
Yeah,
yeah. And it's a question of doing it within limits, and also not having a complete meat market. Because when you're on, you know, you can do it with the players that don't have any allegiance at that point.
Yeah.
You can do it whether it's confidential and it gets traded, and then the players are informed after or so on. But when you've got players who've been playing for that club, you know, I think they need to own the agenda, and that raises challenges about that.
It makes sense though with draftees, like let's say last year.
Yeah, draftees. Yeah,
draftees for sure. So Gold Coast pick up Ben Ainsworth at pick four, but Carlton at pick five really wanted him. We'll give you pick five and we'll give you 23
as well. I've got no problem with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's a pretty strong likelihood of coming in sooner rather than later.
Next couple of years, we're expecting that?
Yeah, well, it'll be up to the guys to come forward with it. But as I said, I like broadly the opportunity, if you're really well managed, the opportunity to progress your club as quick as you can and have more tools to do it.
What would it mean for the night itself to have that ability?
Again, that's an executional issue. But I think potentially you have that done privately, and then when the players are announced, they're at their final destination. Now,
okay.
I don't know if that's right or wrong, because maybe you'll need to do it and they'll be known and reflect on it. But and I don't know how deep it goes, because maybe you have to do it all the way through, and then you do it a second day, you come back and trade. I don't have an answer. I haven't thought about it too much, but the team have worked through that.
Have you got a dream draft night or dream draft day in terms of your head and what the event looks like? And do you feel like at the moment it's as good as it can be? Do you feel like it grips people's attention enough?
Well, the lead up is a bit bigger than the actual night, I reckon. I'm not sure we've done our best job of the evenings. We tried to put it in Adelaide a couple of years ago.
Adelaide didn't go so
well.
Yeah,
that was a tough night.
You got booed when you walked on stage.
Yeah, well, that was not ideal. But
they all left as well after about pick 15.
I felt like it was a long, stale night for everyone, including me.
What's it like? Who tells you the pick? What's it like behind the stage? So this Friday night, I'm assuming that you'll be reading out the picks again.
Yeah, I'm doing the first 10 at least, I know that. So, yeah, there's a screen that comes up. They punch it in and you literally go, okay, and then I think I've actually get the iPad, if I remember it, and it's either on the iPad or I walk out with it. So you're just waiting for it to come up. My job is a bit like that. I'm doing a lot of presenting and announcing. And the guy, you know, there's good systems and processes and you know, you're wandering out trying to give it a bit of theatre without diminishing it.
How do you know you get the right pronunciation?
You don't. I ask anyone who's around, because there's a sort of...
Has there been one that's stuck in your mind you thought, oh, no?
I can't remember. I'm sure I've got ones wrong.
No, I don't reckon you have from memory.
Yeah, there's 20 or 30 names on a list, or there's lists around, and I read through it in advance and I'll ask Shifter or you or someone what their names are. So you try. Because it's important for them and their family. So you actually do go through the effort of trying to find out the names and to respect the fact this is a big deal for the kids and their families.
And they're all watching. And they're all gripped.
They're
in.
All
there's,
watching.
There's
and
20
that,
there.
Yeah, and it's a big deal. And you'd like to think the fact that their name's right when you call it out.
Do you follow US sports and US drafts and try and take it?
The NFL have. I've tuned in when it's been on and had a look.
You ever been?
No. But I've got...
People here,
AFL have been, people have been, yeah. Danielle Beasby's been, I know that, and trying to think of production. So we can do better with it. We can do better with the production and, it improves year on year, but we've got a bit of way to go, I think.
It's been nearly 10 years since it's been in Melbourne. Is it an event that you personally always want to see interstate or interstate,
no.
Non-Victoria?
No, but I think it's one that's good to have it moving around. No one wanted to leave the Gold Coast, I don't think.
We like the Gold Coast. We like the broad beach environment and going
to Moomoo's for steak.
Steak, yeah. Altos did a good pizza as well.
All of that. So What is a good part about the draft is all the clubs are there. It's post-season, so everyone's a bit more relaxed, and you actually there's a good community around it, and you have meetings you wouldn't ordinarily have. All the coaches are there. So it's a good chance to sort of catch up. And the Gold Coast, because it was a smaller community, was pretty good because everyone really saw each other a lot during the day. And that gets lost a bit in Sydney, I think.
Player movement, is it restrictive enough? Is it open enough? You know, you see a lot of talk about players picking where they want to go, young players, and choosing destinations. You saw that during the trade period again. Are you comfortable with that from your perspective?
Yeah, I don't think it's a bad thing. And people talk about loyalty and all those challenges of free agency. Players are incredibly loyal, which is good. So, you know, we get to the end of a trade period and people are bemoaning the lack of trades and player movement again. So, if anything, I think there needs to be more player movement. If you actually want to get clubs who, again, well-managed, how to climb quicker, then freer player movement helps that. So, I certainly don't think there's... I think there's an opportunity for greater player movement.
How would we do that? What's the opening?
Mid-season trade.
Would you like to see that?
Yeah, I would, yeah. Because it's one of the only times, too, where you have the weaker clubs, i.e. the club lower down the ladder, having more leverage in the trade. So, you know, it's 4, 5, 6 years for a club to get the position to be competing deep into the finals. And, you know, you might get the wrong couple of injuries and you've got everything right and you're travelling well and you need a player. So, you know, the ability to trade mid-season to pick up if you're down key defenders or rucks
or something. Yeah, yeah.
Well, yeah, I think the best example was 2 years ago, whatever it was, Port were out of ruckman. I think it was the year that Paddy Ryder unexpectedly was rubbed out for a year, and then
didn't get much.
Lobie did his knee or something.
Yep.
And they ended up having
Trengove rucking. Yeah.
So St Kilda, as an example, had 4 or 5 ruckmen, weren't competing for the 8, needed, I'm sure they had something that Port Adelaide had. So that would have been an opportunity and St Kilda would have had the leverage. And, you know, you don't have to do the trade if you don't want to. So the reason some people don't like it is because I think, you know, there's an emotive side to the trade, but that's no different to the end of the year.
Yeah. It's something that doesn't seem to be as popular with clubs, though, so far. As an idea?
Yeah, because of what I just talked about. Yeah. Oh, and you're losing IP. You're right, but what's the difference at the end of the year?
You're right, though. You don't have to do the trade if you don't want to.
Don't do the trade.
Yeah.
So no one likes change generally, Cal, and our clubs like it as little as anyone.
But be interesting, though.
Yeah, I think we'll get there on that, too.
You do think it'll happen?
Yeah.
Okay. There's a Road to the Draft exclusive there. Draft age. I want to be interested in your view on that as well. Is 18 right? There's so many opinions about this, and you hear coaches with different ones saying that they're not ready enough, and then kids come out and say, well, we're ready. We don't want to wait another year. So 18, is it about right?
Well, I'll only prosecute one side of it, which is that it's not right because it's there at 18. And the argument is from clubs who want the players more ready to have an impact and want to do less development work. And when they draft them, they can make a more immediate presence on the field. The challenge with that is that our system, when they're coming out of school, they then wouldn't, we'd have to create another system to pick them up, so which is expensive. Two, the kids want to play, and therefore, if they can't, they might choose other, you know, when you're competing for talent, they choose alternate routes where they're ready to play at the elite level at 18. They're the two big ones. We keep looking at it, but I think we're going to be with the status quo for a while.
Just a couple before I let you go. I want to take you back down memory lane. 20 years ago, you're on Carlton's supplementary list. Mm. How did that happen as a draft experience? Can you describe how that actually...
Oh, I was old school. I was on the sup list. I was much better sort of running water there, I think. I wasn't good enough, so let's be clear about that. Shane O'Sullivan was the head of recruiting at the time. Got a call. Took me for lunch at... the University Cafe on Lygon Street.
Yeah.
Come and train. And I was lucky. Yeah, it was a thrill. I was there 6 or 7 months, full pre-season, bit of reserves. Wasn't good enough. Sit here knowing that and pleased that I had the opportunity to experience that. And it was a great Carlton era with Kernahan, captain, and all those great players there. So it was a great life experience.
What's the biggest challenge facing young players in coming to the game now? So the guys that you'll meet and greet on the stage on Friday night?
Two things pop into the head. Learning the resilience and mental strength it requires to really compete and be great, and a more tactical one, social media. And, you know, if I could influence these kids to stay off it,
good luck.
I would, but I won't have any impact. I know that. But it's like, you know, I don't think there's a lot of fun for young players on this journey, early doors, to be on social media.
Thanks for coming on the show. You got any questions for us?
I want to know who St Kilda's going to get 7 and 8.
I think that Hunter Clark is a good chance at 7 and 8, but I think they want a midfielder to get through. One of the other guys, maybe Chera is a chance to get through, Adam Chera. Jaden Stevenson, they have to consider really strongly.
Give me the first 10 picks in order.
In order? I can't do that. I don't know. Well,
of course you don't know. If we
knew that. I don't know yet, though. I'm not comfortable putting it out yet. It's on Wednesday night.
Are you saving it?
That's for our
website. Oh, I see. It's like a...
Yeah. It got too nice to build this up. This is a big moment.
Sorry, everyone. Yeah, I'm sorry.
You don't want to rob...
Just write it down for me and I won't tell anyone.
Don't want to rob the audience of, you know, what's
what
coming
is on. The audience here? How many people are we talking to?
Here? More now that you're on.
No,
appreciate you coming on.
Thanks,
good
Carol.
Luck.
You're doing a good job, and I'll wait to see on Wednesday night your top 10.
Just right pronunciations. It's Aidan Bonner.
Aidan Bonner.
Yes.
Okay, where does he go?
Nat has pronounced that one incorrectly on a couple of occasions. He might be going to the Saints at 7 and 8.
Bonner.
This
is the kid who's had two knee recos, right?
That's him.
Right.
Yep.
Good story if he gets there.
He'll get there.
Okay, Aidan Bonner.
We'll see you up there.
Thanks, Carol.
All righty. That was good. Wasn't it, Nat? Yeah. Good to have Gil McLaughlin in here. Clearly a fan of the draft, and we'll see what he comes up with on Friday night and who the Saints select at 7 and 8. Obviously very interested in those choices. I'm talking to myself here, which is a little bit interesting and a bit different, but I'm going to be asking myself some Twitter questions now because obviously we're all interested in what the late mail and latest whispers are heading into Friday night. And I must admit that it's probably been one of the more difficult drafts to work out this year because there's three clubs in the top 10 with two picks each, and they're probably not going to be likely to give too much away about who they're keen on, and they want to get their best combinations through. So that's made it a difficult one to do. And also the fact that there's just an even crop, and it's an even crop of kids, and beyond the top, you know, Andrew Brayshaw could go pick one or he could go pick five, and that's pretty rare to have such a range for the top sort of group. So I will say that it has been hard, and look, that's not an out. It's not a suggestion that we're not going to go too well on Wednesday night in the Phantom Draft and all that sort of thing. We'll see how we go and we'll try our best, but it's been an interesting year. And speaking to clubs, they still don't know who they're going to pick up, so that makes it particularly difficult for us Phantom Drafters out there to piece it all together, but we'll give it a shot. Questions off Twitter. Ricky, in your opinion, would the Eagles take Jaden Stevenson at 13 if he's available? Is there any non-Oscar Allen talls that the Eagles have been linked with? Well, I think Stevenson would come into their thinking if he was there at 13, but I'm not sure he will be. I know the Pies are interested in him still. Fremantle still interested in him at number 5, Pies at 6, also the Saints at 7 and 8, and the Giants at pick 11 would be right in the mix as well. So, look, there's some clubs, no doubt, that have ruled him out because of that heart issue that has popped up during the combine about 6 to 7 weeks ago, and that's been a difficult thing for him to go through at this point of the year and this point of his draft sort of passage. But I'm not sure if the Eagles would be the right fit there. Oscar Allen, in terms of them, has been linked a little bit. Interesting, though, because some might see Oscar Allen as being a midfielder going forward. He's a 191-centimetre player who can mark well and run well and really compete, but I know some clubs might look at him more as a guy who can play as a big midfielder going forward. So something to look out for there, where if he is taken as by the Eagles, and some might say maybe they don't need that sort of player at the moment, he can still fill that role in the midfield. Elliot has asked, which midfielder could slide to the Tigers pick 17 and make them jump over taking a tall? Well, that would be an interesting one. I think the talls in that mix would be Jared Brander. Obviously, he's sort of around that mark now. I don't think he's going to go in the top 12 or so selection, so he will be available after that. Sam Hayes is going to be on the board at that point. I'd be shocked if he wasn't, but he probably goes to the Tigers 25 if he's still available at that point. I don't think they grab him at 17. Which midfielders could be in the mix there? Maybe they look at someone like Zach Bailey. It might be a touch too early. The Lions have been linked to him at pick 18. Lockie O'Brien, someone that they might have another look at. And I guess the smaller type is Jack Higgins, who has played in the midfield at times this year, but probably goes to his first AFL club, or his drafted club, as a small forward. Worth remembering, of course, that they will get Pat Nash at some point with one of their three picks or their fourth if they're lucky and a bid doesn't come. So he is a midfielder that would come into contention there. Sammy wants to know, which players do you consider bomb-proof in this year's draft? Well, they're right at the top. There's no surprise. I won't name too many because there's not too many players that are bomb-proof. But you have to think that with someone like Andrew Brayshaw, there's not too many concerns that he's going to get there sooner or later. He's a star. So there's not too many flaws in his game. You can see him really playing 200 games plus. I feel the same way about Higgins. I know the running joke with Nat is that we've sort of been big fans of Jack throughout the year. But he couldn't have done much more to suggest that he's going to be a good player. Look, there's maybe a little bit of question mark on his takeoff speed, but he's really worked on that closely and continues to work on that. Did see him down at Collingwood Wednesday or Thursday, doing more drills and working out, and right into the last week before the draft, he's still trying to get better. So that's him. Max wants to know, just on Jack Higgins, any chance he can make it to the Dogs? Well, they have shown an interest in him, and I think he's around the mark, probably more so for pick 16 than pick 9, I believe. I know Jack's going to the draft, so I think that someone has nominated him as a sort of top 10 chance, but I think he's more of a chance with their pick 16 for the Doggies there. There's a few other clubs around the mark who might take a look at him there as well, with West Coast and Richmond perhaps circling. Mohammed wants to know who Brisbane is looking at with pick 15. Any chance of Jared Brander coming into things? He'd be a shot, but I think they're more looking at midfielders at that point. So more midfielders with their pick 15 and 18. Lockie Fogarty, if he's there, would be right in the mix to head to the Lions. Renegade Watt wants to... Renegade Funk? What else? What other types of renegades are there? The Melbourne Renegades? I'm talking to myself here. It's not as fun without someone to actually laugh at my gags. Well, Jack's here, our producer, but you can't hear him laughing. Do you think Freo will look at Darcy Fogarty? I don't think he's in their mix in their five. I'd be surprised now if he heads there and heads west from South Australia. Matthew wants to know, is Jaden Stevenson's heart condition that serious that it sees him falls out of the top 10? Well, according to some clubs, I think they have their concerns and they want more information about it. But for others, I think their club medicos would say that they're okay with it and that, you know, with treatment and whatnot, there's no more risk with him than anyone else in the pool. And that's certainly what his manager, Robbie D'Orazio, told AFL.com last week when the news broke. And it has been news that has been around for sort of 6 or so weeks. So that's sort of something the clubs have been getting their heads around as well. Dan wants to know, geez, we've got a few Tigers supporters in the podcast today. If Brander, Allen, Hayes and Bolter are available at 17, who do you think Richmond take? At that point, I think it'd be out of Brander and Allen, Oscar Allen. I think Oscar Allen would probably be the preferred target, although Jared Brander would be well in the mix. I think Bolter's a little bit further back for me. Jared politely has put the question forward. What do you see Fremantle doing with their two picks inside the top 10, picking two midfielders or a mid number two and Norton or Stevenson at number five? I think they probably go two midfielders, but they might see Stevenson as a midfielder. So I think they're much more likely to go those group than Norton. The two midfielders could be any of Brayshaw, Chera, Davies, Uniac and Dow. And Stevenson obviously plays half forward, but did move into the midfield role later in the year. And I know some clubs still on the back of his season would have him as a top five pick. So it's no surprise that he's in there on talent. I guess the other stuff will just have to work itself out depending on each club. Paul, Hawthorn's first pick, number 43. Jack, you're interested in this one. Best case scenario, who are we most likely to get and who could be available? Someone like Matthew Ling would be a good pick if absolutely everything went their way and he was available somehow at 43. I don't think that's going to happen. There's a few clubs in the 30s who like him and maybe even in the 20s as well. So that would be a little bit of a surprise if he's there, but he would be a great get with that sort of speed and left foot and movement off half back. So you can very much see him playing the Hawthorn role, but I don't think he's going to be there. That's sort of absolutely the best case, I think. Well, the best case is Cam Rayner, but I don't think that one's going to happen either. Who could be available? Someone like Joel Garner could be available. Left footer, strong bodied. They could go for another midfielder, someone like James Warple, who's in that sort of range as well. And Buster, with the final question off the podcast today. Cal, Jaden Stevenson appears the possible slider. Any chance he gets to selection 11 and have the Giants indicated they have any real interest in him? There's a chance he gets there and there's a chance he gets taken by the Giants. So I know there's lots of chances there. It's a bit like that Dumb and Dumber line. So you're telling me there's a chance, you know, one in a million, when you know, what's his name? Harry, yeah, not Harry, Lloyd. Lloyd Christmas asks out Mary Swanson and says there's a chance. So, look, there's a chance of that happening with the Giants taking him. I think it's better than one in a million. But, yeah, I think he's he'd have to be on the radar. And at 11, he's certainly such a talent. And I rank him in the top five of this year's draft pool in terms of players pound for pound. And he could be something really special if it all comes off for him. So he's got a unique set of tricks. And it's funny when you sort of ask people what sort of player Jaden's like and who he's like. Not many people can put a... can really put a comparison forward about someone who he plays like because he's quite unique with his mix of traits. So there's our Twitter questions for today. Hit me up on Twitter over the next few days. I'll try to get back to you in the lead up to the draft. There's still, don't be too offended if I don't get back to you because there's a bit going on Twitter feed. And please, it's coming out Wednesday night. The mock draft is coming out Wednesday night. I'm not going to tweet a response and say, yes, it's coming out again because I've already said it a few times, Jack. Wednesday night, PM. We'll have our top 30 phantom draft and also club-by-club whispers for who's looking around and who might be in the mix for selections after the top 30. So that's that. Right, we all know what that little sting means. It means it's Song of the Week time, and I'm still going to run with this little segment, even though Nat's not here to go, oh, I don't even know that song, because she might know this one. It's Stand Back by Stevie Nicks. I saw Stevie Nicks last week. Fleetwood Mac singer, obviously, and I've been listening to Stevie Nicks all week, so just thought I'd throw that one. A bit of an older song, Stand Back by Stevie. That's it for the podcast today. Thanks to Gil for co-hosting for 20 minutes and then nicking off. Thanks to Nat for not being here at all. We're going to be up in Sydney from Wednesday onwards. I'll be up there. The guys will come up on Thursday as well. So keep an eye on afl.com.au for plenty of coverage and everything you need to know in the lead up to the draft. And on the night, of course, as well, we'll have live blog. We'll have coverage of every selection. We'll speak to every recruiter about every pick. So there's nowhere you'd rather go for draft content than afl.com.au this week, I think. And we hope you've enjoyed the lead up to the draft and hope you enjoyed the podcast today. We'll be back for our final podcast next week after the rookie draft. Rookie draft's on Monday night. We'll cover that extensively as well and then come back for a bit of a wrap on things on Tuesday. And then we'll sail off into the sunset, Jack, with you. And with that, we bid you farewell. See ya.